You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Today we are in the crease talking goalies here. Situation with the Kings in and out of the pipes. We're doing over and under some fantasy stuff for where your Kings sit in the national media. And we're talking about a new signing, not for the Kings, but what does it mean for maybe future Kings prospects? Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Yeah, let's go. All right, boys, we got the full team in here. You know, it's been a while. How are you guys doing, Joe?
Good. Very good. Today's a big day today in the Paterino household. The oldest son went off to kindergarten. So that was a big day today.
Right. Got him on the bus.
Everything went well. He had a great day. We'll see how tomorrow goes. But so far, so good. So big day today was a good one.
You got a young man on your hands, huh?
It's exactly. And we got one more coming in a couple of years, but one for one so far on day one. So how are you guys doing?
They were doing good, had my fantasy football draft a couple of days ago, ready for the football season. Got a lot of high hopes for my Chargers this year, which will almost inevitably lead to disappointment, like always. But always looking forward to football starting because right after that's hockey. So looking forward to that.
Do you have Kelsey as I do?
Unfortunately, Joe, yeah, I do. I took him with the sixth pick. So, of course, I'm in the group chat with all my buddies, and we've done the league for a few years. And as soon as that news pops up, everyone's, like, tagging me, like, oh, look at Kelsey. And but hopefully he plays. Like, it's weird because I took him with, the notion, like, as a Charger fan, like, if he does well, it's like win-win. Like, if he does well, like, okay, my fantasy team's doing well. But if he doesn't do well, maybe the Chiefs won't do so well either. I don't know, but it's already started to bite me in the leg so far.
Well, they say no ACL damage, and it's like a bunch of like bone and ligament bruises. So I think it's just going to be pain management for him. But the thing with bone bruise and stuff like that, it could lead to further injury down the line. And the Chiefs aren't trying to win week one. They're trying to win the Super Bowl again. So my guess, even though he's a tough SOB, is that he would sit. But I don't think you're looking at like a Cooper Kupp situation. Right, I think Cooper Kupp's about to go on the IR for 4 weeks or so. So he was already ruled out. And when you're day-to-day, quote-unquote, and you get ruled out 4 days before the game, that's usually not a good sign. So
yeah.
It could be something different there. I'm ecstatic. Joe and I were talking about it earlier. Nick Bosa finally signed, richest player there in football. $50 million guaranteed, and then the Niners restructure some contracts. So Jed York shelling out $78 million of his own money today to players. That's a lot of quiche, as they say. But I hope everybody, even though you're not making $78 million, is doing well in the chat. Ethan Adams is saying, what's up from Ohio? What up, Ethan? Welcome into the chat, my man. Welcome, Carter Scores. Hello, everybody. Dire Fan, what up, dudes? And Nav, hey, guys. Hey, boys. We are about to talk some hockey, but before we get into Kings hockey, a new deal in the hockey realm just came in the Sanderson deal. So Jake Sanderson, left shot D, plays for the Ottawa Senators, eight-year contract, making quite a bit of money. I think it was 8x805. I just sent it in the chat. Was that right?
Yeah.
8x805. So obviously not a Norris Trophy winner, not a you know, a guy that you would name in the top 10 defensemen, but getting a big contract. And the Sens have now have 4+ players, as you mentioned in our group chat, Joe, you know, around that 7.5 to 8.5 range that are going to be their core for the future. You know, they're obviously they're going to try to compete this year, but this really sets themselves up for the cap to rise and have that group all grow together.
Yeah, and not to mention, at least at the moment, 2 first-round picks in this season's in the upcoming draft. So they're set up really nice. I'm a really big fan of what Ottawa is doing. I know it, I feel like Buffalo for good reason and Detroit for pretty good reason too. Get it seems a little bit more of the buzz, but I'm in on Ottawa. I you know maybe this is a year where they're kind of contending and they're just going to miss or whatever. But this is a team that's definitely on the rise. I really like. Listen, yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big contract. It's a big bet. I want the GM that's willing to bet on the young talent. I want the GM that's willing to bet and pay for future performance rather than past performance. I'm generally going to be a buyer about that. I think you're going to see a lot of the same stuff about what has he done? What has he done? It was the same thing you heard with Tage Thompson. It was the same thing you heard with Jack Hughes. It's the same thing you heard with Tim Stutzel. All the same conversation. All those guys are going to be massively underpaid. Maybe Sanderson won't be. Who knows? Maybe one of these deals just doesn't work. But like, I feel like the downside here is Sanderson is a capable second pair $6 million defenseman. So it ends up being a little bit of an overpay. But that's like, I think that's like the worst case scenario or best case scenario. He's a top pair D-man that should be making double digits in a few years. So, you know, I love what they're doing with the young core. You mentioned the core. Stutzla locked up. Kachuk locked up. Josh Norris locked up. Now Shabbat locked up. Sanderson locked up. None of those guys are making 8.5. I think that's really good business by the Ottawa Senators. I think they're in pretty good shape right now.
Yeah, I agree. I like the fact we've kind of talked about this a little bit when they did the Stutzla deal, right? When it seems like more GMs are kind of going to this, banking on the future potential of what these young players have shown a little bit. So, yeah, I agree. I really like – I think Ottawa's kind of – I don't want to say they're like a locked team for the playoffs, but you kind of look at that division. That division seems kind of I don't know if it's as strong as maybe others think so. I think Boston's might have a little bit of regression. I think they'll still be a playoff team, but there's some other teams that are like what the Red Wings,
Sabres,
Maple Leafs, Canadiens. I think there's still a chance for them to be a playoff team. I think a lot of it has to do with that division, but they have a really good team. I think you would agree, Joe. They probably met like overpaid Korpisalo a little bit.
I would agree with that.
But you got a good goaltender in Korpisalo for the time being, right? You're able to make some things happen.
It's the term. So much of those deals, it's the term that I don't like giving almost any term for goalies. But I guess if you're in a situation when you look at they don't have any really big contracts, double-digit contracts. We just talked about their cores locked up. You know, they've got some money. You know, Tarasenko's on a one-year deal. So Kubalik's on a one-year deal. So it's not like they've got a lot of money here that's tied up that's like wasteful spending. I mean, Giroux's got 2 years at 6'5", but still a valuable veteran. Like, nothing that's going to hurt them. So I guess if there's a scenario where you can overpay a goalie a little bit, it's the Ottawa Senators. Now, again, is Korpisalo the guy for that many years? It's not my cup of tea, but, you know, that's the route they decided to take, and we'll see if that goes. But, yeah, I love it, though. I mean, I agree on the division. Like, I think Toronto is a lock for the division. Tampa is still probably good enough to be second, but any team, Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit, I don't think Florida's a shoe-in for third in the division just because they made it to the Cup final last year. I think that third spot is very much up for grabs. Randy, what do you think?
I think you're paying for future success, and that's not always going to work out. Mm-hmm. But you look at the Braves in Atlanta, and I understand there's no salary cap for baseball, but they locked out pretty much their entire team for the next 5 seasons.
Yeah, that's a good right? person.
And so they went in, hey, this guy had one good year. We believe in him. We're going to lock him up. Guy had a couple good years. Believe in him. Lock him up. We're going to trade for this guy. Lock him up. And so then you have that core there. And obviously there's no salary cap in baseball, but I think it's a similar thing into that idea. I'm going through it with the Niners right now, right? The Niners not made every single one of their core members the highest paid player at their position. And they're going, they're rolling with a rookie quarterback. So they're keeping a core together. They're trying to go all in. I think this is kind of an all in move with their core, because obviously 8 years is a long time. If it doesn't work out, they have to hit on three of the four of these big contracts to make it worthwhile. If you have multiple guys that don't perform up to that level, even with the salary cap going up, it's going to be a drain. I mean, i.e., you know, the Mark Vlasic contract for the Sharks, right? Like, he's almost unmovable at this point, and he's never going to win a Norris Trophy again. So, like, it's just kind of that thing. But overall, I think it's good. And we're going to talk about some similarities where I think the Kings will have already done, like, say, with the Kempe contract. And as King of Cups here, is Sanderson's deal better than Fiala over the next 7 years? No, it's not. Fiala's already proven that he's a top player, and it's less expensive. And so, yeah, I mean, is it the best contract to ever be signed? No, but it could be. You know, like, they're betting on future bets. And anybody who bets, which I've done, what, 30 best ball drafts? It's all future stuff for this year. So
yeah,
you're just betting on the future. And if you win and you hit in those, you know, you could be walking away with $3 million, or in this case, a top two defenseman for $8 million.
Go ahead, Ross.
Well, it just makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, at this point, like, you see these players, these young players, when they come into the league and they show any hints of star talent, like any hint of it, or just being a quality good player. I mean, look at what all these young players are doing lately, too, in terms of Matthew Tkachuk, like, just. They get to this RFA position. They're like, hey, I don't want to be here anymore. If you can lock up these young stars that have shown the potential, or just showing at least to progressing to be that star talent, why not try to lock them up long term? Because you don't know if they're ever going to stick around as long as they can. When it gets to the point where that RFA year comes, they could just all of a sudden throw a Matthew Tkachuk at you or whatever, and then just try to leave. Or we've seen it obviously with Pierre-Luc Dubois too. So, yeah, I mean, I love that GMs are now getting to the fact and knowing that, like, hey, we drafted this talent. We've kind of seen him show some flashes already. There's no real reason to think that this type of player, especially a player like Jake Sanderson, who the type of play he gives on the ice isn't going to be – it's not the flashiest style, but he's a productive top four defenseman who can play. He's almost like a Matt Roy, I kind of see, where he's like a little bit of a hybrid, not necessarily offensive, not necessarily huge defensive style, but he's a good quality top four defenseman. Now all of a sudden you have locked up long term that you don't have to worry about now for the near future or long term. So I love it, and I think a lot of more GMs should be doing the same thing.
Well, yeah, and you're seeing that, and you just, in the East, you look at Buffalo with Thompson, Dylan Cousins. They got their top two centers locked up for under a combined $14 million. They're going to be locking up Dahlin. Samuelson's locked up. I would imagine Owen Power. This is probably a pretty comparable deal if you're Owen Power. You know, if you want an 8-year deal, maybe Owen Power gets something like this. New Jersey.
Joe, you brought up Buffalo, and I think this is where I think the segue should go to the Kings.
Okay.
They locked up both centers for under $14 million.
Yep.
Right now, obviously, Kopitar is the number one, but he'll be playing for $7 million. Right now, PLD is playing for $8 million. But in the future, it's going to be PLD and hopefully the number two overall pick for the Kings, Quentin Byfield. If Quentin Byfield playing on the first line this year, scores 40, scores 50, scores 60 points, is this the type of deal that you would want the Kings to make for the number two overall pick?
Listen, and Russ kind of alluded to it earlier. If you see a young player that's come into the league and he evolves into this player that finally is showing like he's going to be, this is what you expected when you drafted him, I have no problem giving them this deal. I mean, we sort of talked about it a little bit with Gabe Vilardi before the trade, like, our maybe even toward the end of the season, like, is he earning himself a long-term deal? Little different scenario, because he dealt with some pretty significant, I mean, I think back injuries we can classify as significant. There were some pretty significant injuries that kind of held him back a bit. He missed some time again this past year, so I can understand the risk there. Then obviously they make the trade, but yeah, like, this is the strategy I'm in on. I'm in on what Ottawa's doing and what Buffalo's doing and what New Jersey's doing. You alluded to the Braves in baseball. Like, I would rather pay for this for the future talent. And I think with Byfield, yeah, like obviously we have to see what type of year he has, but I have no problem doing it because if he's the player you think he's going to be, that player is going to be $10 million in 4 years rather than if you get him for eight or 7.5 or whatever the, you know, whatever it is in the scenario. So, yeah. You know, playing that's just generally where I'm at.
Playing on the first line, Russ, where would Byfield's season have to end up for you to shell out $6.5 or $7+ million per year?
That's weird. I was thinking about that too. I mean, this is really the direct correlation to this Sanderson deal. It's because Chick Sanderson was the fifth overall pick in the 2020 draft. Byfield, obviously, the second overall. So each of them have 1 year left on their entry level contract. I think Sanderson's only like a month older than Byfield. It's not necessarily you think of Jake Sanderson and think like, oh, he's this flashy player. Like, he's not necessarily been like Tim Stützle since coming to the league. He hasn't just lit the world on fire. He's only played 1 year and he's good defenseman. So it's weird because I think about it with Byfield. I mean, right now I wouldn't give Byfield an $8 million deal, but the Kings.
So let me just throw Jake Sanderson's stats out there real quick. Sorry, Russ.
Yeah, no problem.
77 games played, 32 total points. He's averaging 21 minutes a night, and his Corsi is 51% in his first full season as a pro.
As a 21-year-old defenseman.
Yeah. And but the thing is with Sanderson, too, is he was coming out of college, and I believe he played one of the – North Dakota?
North Dakota State. Yeah.
And they're a pretty good team. So he obviously one of the higher-end players coming out of that draft, and he's shown it. He's shown the capability. It's almost like what we've seen at Brock Faber for the Minnesota Wild when he came in the league. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a deal like that come in the pipeline for Faber as well. But for Byfield, like, I wonder if the Kings are – if they really feel that this player can be what they've talked about or we're just kind of waiting and he's shown flashes and they're so confident in this player. I wonder if maybe Rob Blake's thinking in the back of his mind, like, let me just sign Byfield to an $8 by $7.5 million deal. Because for me, I probably would do it. Like, I've seen Byfield. I see the flashes there. I see it. Obviously, the production's not there. But if you can get a player like Byfield who can eventually grow into that second overall talent that we all expect him to be, and maybe I'm a little bit more bullish on him than some other people are, but if he can grow into that talent and you have a player like that signed at, like, $7.5 million for the next, like, 8 years, man, I mean, like I said, I don't know if that deal happens now just based off of what he's done in the NHL so far.
Right.
But if he starts lighting the world on fire, like in these first like 20 or so games, man, if I'm Rob Blake, I'm trying to get Byfield signed to a deal similar to that because you can't.
What does that look like for you?
I'm sorry?
What does that look like for you? How many points? Like, where do you feel like this season has to end up for him?
If he could score like 20 points in like the first like half of the season, 25, 30 points in the first half of the season, I think you have to throw him that deal. And that's on the higher end. Like, a lot of people are just hoping to get him like 15 goals, 30 assists. That'd be like a 45-point season. So if he sets the world on fire with the first half of the season, starts to show a lot of that progression, playing on the first line, play with a full year of Kopitar and Kempe, and actually starts scoring some goals, I mean, I think you have to maybe try to invest a little bit and gamble because this is what the GMs are doing now. They're gambling on these players growing into the superstar talent that they drafted him in. And that's kind of where Byfield's at right now.
The difference,
it's a tough argument.
The difference is when we look at like what Ottawa did with like Stützle has shown when they signed his deal, he showed a hell of a lot more than what Byfield has shown so far. Jake Sanderson has shown a hell of a lot more production wise than what Byfield has shown so far. So like, yes, it's a gamble, but they've at least got something under their belt to go off of to see. And right now, admittedly, it's very little for the Kings. So like there's no reason for the Kings to have to even go down this road because he hasn't shown anything. I mean, we all buy the fact that he was an impactful player when he was up on that first line. He did a lot under the hood, but at some point you have to have the production to start to show. And I think, if you start to get to that 40, 50, 60-point range this season, then what happened last year and what everybody was talking about, like, guys, these points are coming. He's doing all the right things. It will come. And then when it does come, you know, then then yeah, it's going to be worth it to do that. And I think you could even do that. It's not as if you needed to do this now. I think because he's done virtually nothing for the first two years of his deal here, that, you know, 1 year and in the third year, you could basically quote unquote buy high on his breakout year and pay him whatever, say 8x7. And I think you could do that. And I think I don't know if he would do that. I don't know. Maybe not. You know, who knows? Maybe he wants to bet on himself and take a bridge deal. And that's maybe what he prefers, which is obviously his right to do that. But it's not as if, like, say Ottawa waited another year and Stützle did what he did last year. Now you're not getting that deal you signed him for. You know what I mean? So they already had a decent season to go off of. And they said, let's do it now before it gets even bigger. And it worked, at least so far, right? So that's the thing with Byfield, is I think the Kings have the ability to wait for him to actually do it before having to
offer. Yeah, and we're not talking about him signing it weight based on what he made, right? So Urho's right. Coming in here, 7.5 for Byfield for 8 years is not going to happen. We have Carter coming in here. I think Byfield gets 50-plus points. You go 8x8, 40 points or less. You go bridge deal. We got Canada Cups going 20 goals, 60 points. For QB this year, book it. So there's a lot of discrepancy just in three comments in this chat. I'm sure if we threw this on Twitter, it would be or on X, it would be the same thing. But we're all talking about hypothetical. We're all putting the crystal ball out there. Mm-hmm. In order to invest by 8x8 or something along what Sanderson just got, he'd have to put up 60 plus for me. Like, otherwise, I would have to need to be cheaper or bridge. I'd be fine with a bridge deal and paying more in the future. But like 40 points, like in flashes, doesn't really do it for me to get an 8x8 or 50 points. And he like eked in there.
60 points is a lot of points, bro. That's a lot. I mean, look at
Dubois. That's what Stützle did.
I understand that. Yeah. But I mean, it's, I don't know. They're different players. Stützle came into the league known as this electrifying scorer that wasn't really necessarily that two-way type player. We've been kind of just thrown constant information from the team is Byfield's known to be this project. He's going to be this future top line center in the league. That's why we didn't take a player like Stützle, obviously, because
when 25, 26, 2028, his draft reasoning isn't there for me anymore. Like that whole, he's taken a while. Like if you're investing money, you have to show it. Like that just for me. And so I know 60 points is a lot, but yeah. 60 points, 8x8. I mean, I would pay him what PLD got, right? Like that's just where I'm at. I just don't think it's right to pay somebody 8x8 for 40 points. When you're playing on the line with Kopitar and Kempe, he's probably in the power play time.
But again, like,
you're paying them that 40 points, but that's a 21-year-old that's scoring that 40 points too. Like for me, I understand that. Like,
but you keep bringing the age in. Stützle was that age, and he scored 60.
That's a great deal. And I think even still, so if it's 40 points, and maybe it's not 8x8, it's 8x7. But like the idea being that 40 points within a year or two is going to be 60 to 70 points, and so on. Like that's what they're banking on, and I think that's, you know, that's the question. And I think the Kings, because of the way Byfield's first two seasons have gone, have the ability to wait and see this out. They, you know, Byfield hasn't done anything to warrant any sort of deal anywhere remotely close to this. If he does something in that 40, 50, 60 point range, I think then it becomes a conversation. Is it 8x8? Probably not, of course, but I'm not saying it's not either. If he does like what Russ said, 60 points, that ain't nothing. That's a top two line player. And if he does that,
it would be worth it.
It's here. So my question is, what about, because he's a defenseman, Sanderson, what if Jordan Spence gets a long look in the NHL and runs power play two and, you know, has a 45 point season? I'm not saying 8x8, but well, I mean, he's up. This is it. This is he's an RFA. So I guess this is like everybody. I feel like we're not talking, or maybe we are, but Jordan Spence isn't being talked about nearly enough. I mean, everybody's talking about Brant Clark, rightfully so. But Jordan Spence has been a dominant AHL defenseman these last two seasons. If he comes up and lights it up in in his first year, not his first year, but you know what I'm saying? Like the last year of the deal that he's currently on and his status. He's a year older than, he's 22. But, you know, is this a guy, like if they view him as somebody that, you know, we talked about Matt Roy, who I think we all assume will probably get some sort of extension. But if at some point something's going to have to give and they're going to buy into these young defensemen in Spence and Clark, is Spence somebody that gets a long-term deal? Again, maybe not to this extent, but is that in the cards?
He's not a eighth overall pick. Like, it's just not like.
What does the draft status matter at this point?
But I'm just saying, like, you're looking at, it's confirmed. Like Sanderson was drafted high. Mm-hmm. He's confirmed that draft cost, and okay, then now you're paying him, right? Like, it took a long time. I mean, if you don't forget, Mikey Anderson was probably underpaid by $2 or $3 million on a 1 year deal in order to earn that 8 year deal. And that might've been a behind the back type deal, but draft cost means a lot. I mean, you're especially top 10, right? So I think that if Jordan Spence puts up 45 points or what Sanderson did last year, almost a half point per game, then you're probably, instead of an 8x8, you're probably looking at, hey, we can now get rid of Matt Roy and have Jordan Spence in there and have Dowdy, Spence, Clark on the right side. Right, we have a younger player putting up that many points. Yeah, he's not as defensively acumen and everything like that. But I think at that point, you're not giving up on Brant Clark because you've invested the draft capital on him. You have Dowdy signed until the moon, and so you have to make a cut there. And I know that you guys talked about the extension with Roy, but if you see that from Spence and he can run the power play, I'm not seeing an 8x8, but I wouldn't
right.
You know, maybe a four, you know, 4x4 or
What about a Mikey Anderson type of deal for Jordan Spence?
What, 8x4? Or what? He was 8x4, right?
I think like 4-1, 4-2, I want to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this conversation because this is going to be something that's probably going to be talked about as we get probably to the end of the season or even just what we're probably looking at throughout the entire season is what exactly, because I agree with you, Joe. 100%. Like, a lot of people, probably including ourselves, are absolutely overlooking the fact of Jordan Spence finally getting an actual opportunity to showcase himself in the NHL. Cause this is really his first opportunity. Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily his first year, but all these other chances were more because of injury or more placement, COVID, whatever. I mean, this is actually a time for Jordan Spence to showcase himself, especially more than likely getting power play time. Cause I would expect him to be the quarterback in the second power play unit, whether he be in the lineup or Brant Clark. But it's just the dilemma that the Kings are in at this point that, I mean, if I'm Rob Blake, I'm trying to figure out if Matt Roy or Jordan Spence can play on the left side. Because if you can figure out a way to keep Matt Roy around and Jordan Spence, I know it's a terrible conversation, but it's like you're either you're losing Matt Roy next year to keep Jordan Spence because you're not going to keep Brant Clark in the AHL that long. He's probably gonna be on the NHL roster this year. So what do you do? It's those three players that are gonna have to.
You can't keep the train at the station, my friend. You can't keep the train in the station, my friend.
Yeah. So one of them has to play on the left side, right? Yeah. And that's the dilemma that I'm sure Rob Blake and Todd McClellan are gonna try to figure out is who can play or transition to that left side the easiest. And because I mean, if the Kings lose Matt Roy, I mean they're gonna become a worse team. They're going to be worse off for it because as much as I love Jordan Spence and Brant Clark, I don't know if they could actually fill the void that they'd lose from a player like Roy. They'd be obviously more productive offensively, but man, Roy just does so much, so much defensively Kings. It would be tough.
It'd be like a total revamp of the way the team plays. Like when you think of the way the Kings play defense, just look at the Kings play as a system. Just look at their defensemen, defensive defensemen, right? It would be a total shift in how they play if they decided.
Let's run gun, baby. Let's do
it. Hey, I'm all about it.
We did it last year enough as it was.
But it would be a bit of a shift if you were to say we're going to plug in, to your point, Spencer Clark in place of Roy and let Roy. Right. It would also be it'd be tough to see Matt Roy. But again, we're just having a conversation here and before camp starts. So I think it's an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, just to circle it real quick back to Byfield, my thing for Quentin is I think 40 points would be a successful season for me for Byfield. Give him 10 goals, 30 assists. I would hope for more, but it just shows some progression. As long as the team's doing well too. Like if he does around that and the team doesn't make playoffs, okay, we're maybe have a different conversation. But if the team's doing well and he's actually contributing a little bit, kind of like what we saw toward the end of last year, is like the team was doing well, but he was having a little bit of struggles, but he's still being a productive player on the ice. If we see that from Byfield, I'd love to see them get him locked up long term going into the next offseason, because this is the last year of his entry level contract. I don't want to get to a point where we're giving Byfield a bridge deal 2-3 years, and then all of a sudden he does put up a 60 plus point season, and then we have to pay for that season instead of gambling on the fact that we're seeing a little bit of progression from him, instead of waiting for that progression to finally hit, or that production to finally hit. Because I mean, if you look at it, like the Ducks are going through this right now with Trevor Zegras. Trevor Zegras has been talked about it getting a bridge deal. If you give Zegras a bridge deal with everything he's done, if he starts doing lacrosse goals and whatever, starts lighting the lamp a lot more, especially since that team's gonna be a little bit better, man, that deal is all of a sudden gonna jump from being like an $8 million a year deal to now being $9.5 million a year in 3-4 years. So this is that's why we talk about this is a gamble. And if Byfield shows that progression of putting up a 40 point plus season, I think you have to get him locked up long term, because I'm just scared of long bridge deals that will all eventually lead to higher end contracts instead of gambling beforehand.
I bet Buffalo's wishing they didn't do a bridge deal with Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, $10.5 million, that rumored extension. Are you kidding me? How much?
Well, worth it, by the way.
Oh, 100% worth it.
But if they would have done this deal 2-3 years ago before his bridge.
Like, look what the Avalanche did with Cale Makar.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if they'd given him a bridge deal? And right. and also, like, what is Cale Makar's contract going to be in 4 years? $12.5 million or so? 13?
Maybe more.
That's $9 million a year. That's a bargain for that
player. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we thought we were going to have a short episode, guys, but we spent 30 minutes on hypothetical contracts. And
well, Matt Roy came up, and we just have to talk about it, you know?
We're just getting started. Al Smith in the chat, man. Al Smith, you are a beaut.
Dude, Al, he's
the best.
You're the best.
Another 20. Have a beer on us, fellas. I will be having a beer after this podcast. Appreciate that. Come on, guys. Buy these guys a beer. I'm sure you would if you saw them at a game. I'd be buying you guys a beer if I saw you at a game.
That's I'd buy you a beer.
Let's go. I'd buy you all a beer. We're buying beers. Rounds for everybody.
Today, by the way. I love the chat. The
chat. That's good.
Great.
Al Smith coming in here saying, hey, Spence has been paired with Toby in the AHL. Would they try that in the NHL? I think this is a discussion for later on. I think we're going to do a podcast, I believe, next week with Camp. And then guys like we did last year that have make or break years. I think Toby's going to be on that list for me. Tune in next week for that. But I do think that it was an effective pairing in the AHL.
Well, we talked a little bit about this. And now I don't remember who it was, if we were all three on it, if it was just Russ and I, if it was Brandon and I on the bottom.
No, I think pair. It was.
We did a bottom pair discussion and we kind of talked about Toby. It's like, he's going to be in the conversation for that bottom pair left side, but I just don't see what he's shown right now to win the job at all. Like, he just hasn't shown anything or very, very little at the NHL level to where, you know, again, maybe part of that's because early in his career, he's playing higher up in the lineup with Doughty. You know, we saw this with Gavrikov getting too many minutes, too many big minutes, too many high leverage situations on the top pair in Columbus. And boy, did that just totally change when he went to Los Angeles. So maybe if Bjornfoot's paying a third pair, it's better. But I mean, again, if he has a big camp, he has a big camp, but I'm not in on Bjornfoot right now.
I think we talked about it, the defensive, maybe our last podcast that I was on with me and Joe.
I think it was just you and I, now that I think about it.
But I agree with you, Joe. I think everybody or ourselves are in a wait and see mode with Bjornfoot at this point.
Yeah.
We just have to see it.
Yep.
Because what we've seen so far hasn't been great.
Ace King comes in here. Hey, guys. Thanks for the King's content. Thank you, Ace King. And I think this is your first time putting up in the chat. Appreciate you being a loyal fan. I have a a feeling that Byfield will score around 55 points this season. I would love that. He should get it paid around what Kempe is making. When you think of like a five, you think about that would be kind of a nice little deal. It gets pushed them to maybe he has a chance to earn number one money. Obviously, it's not that benefits the player. You get maybe a nice 3 or 4 years of value production, and then you have to pay the beast if he is the true number one.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all were hoping for that Kempe deal to be a little bit longer. You know, so, yeah.
I would have loved to see it be like 6-7 years because right now it's – I mean, it's looking like a great deal right now in terms of what he's being paid, but
would have 4x5, right?
More long-term.
Was it 4x5 by – 4x5.5?
I think it was 4x4.5.
5.5.
5.5, okay. Yeah, 4x5.5, you're right.
So – let's get into this here. We have some actually, before we get into the next part of the podcast, let's throw in our sponsor here at DraftKings. DraftKings code THPN. Get yourself there some free money this weekend. Hey, can you guys believe that 7 months without an NFL game? Crazy, right? Well, good thing that's over. And NFL is here at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL, giving you a can't-miss offer for week one. This week, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you just bet $5 on any NFL game. DraftKings is hooking everyone up with game day greatness. All customers can take advantage of two new offers every single game day this September. Check the app to see what you get. Download now and use code THPN. Sign up. New customers can take home $200 in bonus bets instantly. Just betting $5. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. So everybody in the chat, a lot of people were asking for a hockey royalty, fantasy football league. We thought we had too many fans to just pick 12 people. What I think I'm going to do, and just stay tuned on this. I'm just prepping the idea using DraftKings, our sponsor, to do a daily fantasy group for all the hockey royalty fans, and to where you guys send me that you guys are interested. I send you guys a link to it, and that way, just $5 a week. We can play DraftKings on Sundays, kind of just bet with fans and have a nice little fun time. I'm still looking at that. I'm talking to DraftKings about that and my co-host here, but that might be down the pipe. So just keep an eye out for that on RandoCommando24. I'll be posting that stuff on Twitter if we decide to roll that down the hatch. So up next, over under here. Russ, where did this come from? Is this like a evolving hockey is what you said?
Yeah, so this is we'll go over Evolving Hockey's fantasy productions. So they pretty much, with their model, they come up with point totals for the NHL players. And I screenshotted the point totals in our chat. And I figured let's have a little fun doing a little over-under on some of these.
I want to make a quick disclaimer. Disclaimer, PSA, whatever, because we're going to start to see projections. We're going to start to see player projections. We're going to start to see standings projections from all the models. And everybody's going to lose their damn minds. And a reminder. The number that you see, so when the Kings are projected fourth in the division with 94 points, that is what their model deems most likely to happen. That does not mean that the Kings cannot get 100 points and finish third, second, or third in the division. It just means maybe that has like a 10% chance of happening, where their model has them at a, 20% chance of getting slightly lower than that. Because I think everybody sees those numbers, it's like, that's insane. What do you mean? Of course they can do that. Yes, the model is factoring that in. They absolutely can. And of course they can. And some of these players we'll touch on, like you people might see, how does Kevin Fiala, who was a point of game player last year, only have 79 points? That's just the most likely scenario. Yes, there's probably, I don't know what the percentage is. You'd have to ask Evolving Hockey, a 10%, 15% chance that he gets 90 points or 85 points. It's just, it's not the most likely. I just want to remind everybody of that before everybody loses their minds when they see all the projections on Twitter.
Carter scores already come in here. Joe keeping his level. I like it.
I love it.
So, So Evolving Hockey, I mean, obviously some of the heavy hitters. Let's start with the acquisition here. P- PLD, the Dubois sir, here, Luke, coming in here at 29 goals, 34 assists, 63 points. Now, obviously, he's had a couple seasons in the 60s. You know, I'm gonna put you guys on the spot in this segment here. We're gonna go with over under, and then why? What do you think?
I go over on PLD, just based off the fact that he's coming to a better team. He's playing more than likely with Kevin Fiala, who's probably one of the better wingers he's ever played with. I know he had Ehlers and Kyle Connor over there in Winnipeg, who were no slouches either. But, I mean, when you got a playmaker like Kevin Fiala on your wing mixed with a potential shooter, whether it be Arthur Kaliev or Victor Arvidsson, one of those type of players on the other side, I mean, I'm not going to go crazy and say he's going to have like an 80-plus point season. I mean, in fact, like even if he had like a 63-point season, I think a lot of people would actually sign up for that, and even myself included. But I just am a little bit more bullish on the fact of who he's going to be playing for and the opportunity he's going to be getting, just based off of what this team did last year offensively and what they were able to do on the power play too. If they are able to replicate a lot of stuff on the power play, I can see a lot of these numbers being a little bit more inflated. So I would probably – I'm going to go over on PLD. I think he can hover around the 70-point mark. Like I'm not going to go crazy, like I said, say 80-plus, but around 70 is where I see PLD.
Joseph, where are you at?
I would go probably under on the 70, but I would have – the number in my head was like 65, so I guess I'll go over the 63. But for a lot of the reasons – Russ said, but like I want to acknowledge, like he played with some good players last year in Winnipeg. It wasn't as if, he didn't have talent around him. He didn't.
He wasn't playing in Arizona.
Right. So, but I think that, you know, I think the number is actually pretty fair. I think 63 is a very fair number. I'll say over, but again, we're talking like 2 points.
The guy I really want to focus on here next is number 18 on the list. If people are watching on their big screen, if not, zoom in. But that's one Brent Clark with 7 points. I'm smashing that over all day, every day, and twice on Sundays. I think I know if that's an odds on Vavin Hockey or a betting site on over and under with 7 points, smash that, because I think Clark's getting that all day long. But where do you find Clark's season? I mean, there's lots of outcomes. With obviously, if he starts right away, he's smashing that. But he's parrying his time with Jordan Spence, or maybe he's not. Like right now, you're making these bets or these gambles or these predictions before the season starts. Do you think it's a 50-50 split with Jordan Spence? Do you think it's 70-30? Do you think that's an easy smash at 7 points? Like, where do you guys feel on that?
I mean, to be honest with you, this is such a hard question to answer right now. And it's like, I feel like we wouldn't be able to answer it until even training camp starts, because if the Kings, just based off of what they've done in the past, if they continue their same kind of trajectory with a lot of their young talent, then Brant Clark is more than likely going to start the year in the AHL, which I've made the argument where I think that's a good thing for him. You give him top pair minutes, you give him the top power play unit in Ontario, and then maybe you bring him up like 20 games into the season or so, or injury, whatever. You have that opportunity for him waiting. But yeah, so I think a lot of this for Brant Clark is based off of whether or not he starts in the NHL. I mean, if he does start, then yeah, hammer the over. I mean, I think I saw, I don't know if it was The Athletic or maybe you know, Joe, somebody put out the projections, like the rankings for Calder.
Oh, sorry. I was just doing what Cardiff Score says and muting you for your nonsense. Your nonsense.
I was like, wait, I'm muted for a second. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think The Athletic put out the rankings on the Calder Trophy, right? I think that was them. And Brant Clark was like sixth, I believe.
Seventh? I don't know if it was.
I could be wrong there, but he was definitely up there. I was like, oh, wow, surprising. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe a lot of people on the outside kind of don't realize the patience that Kings management kind of has with their prospects and where Brant Clark fits in the mold. But I mean, if they go with what Joe and I want them to do in terms of playing Spence and Brant Clark, then yeah, I mean, hammer the over. That's going to be a fun line to watch, or pairing to watch for sure.
It's funny you mentioned that, Russ. When I was on the show with the rest of the Pacific Division guys on the Hockey Podcast Network show, I said exactly that because they brought up the Calder. I think it was from at least the list that was pulled up on that show was from DraftKings, I think it was. And Clark was, to your point, seventh or eighth. And I made the comment that there's a chance Clark doesn't even make the roster, which caught a lot of them by surprise. And when I talked about the Kings a bit, I said, no one seems to acknowledge that Jordan Spence could be a factor here. So I agree. I mean, yes, obviously I think if he makes the team and plays, it's an easy over. But would any of us be surprised if he played 60 games in Ontario this year and was kind of a spot guy in the NHL and ends up with 5 points? No, that wouldn't surprise me either. So it really is dependent on what his situation is with the team.
We haven't had our weekly Brant Clark drop, so you are welcome for all your Brant Clark fans. Let's kick it over to another player here. I think this is an interesting one, and I'm looking at it right now. You know, Philippe Deneau right here, 53 points. He's been around that area on the second line. Does he still get that on the third line? How productive will that line be if they move VA up to play with PLD and Fiala? Obviously, that's what we're expecting based on what we talked about in earlier pods. So if you guys missed the middle six conversation, go back, listen to it. That was a great pod talking about the middle six there. But what do you guys think about the Philippe Deneau there? You know, obviously moving down a peg into the third role. He's probably going to get tossed with a lot of different line mates this year. Obviously, injuries play a factor in that. Where do you find his point total being? Do you think he's going to be moved more on defense? I know that's a lot of questions thrown at you. Joe's thinking about it, so I'm going to go with Russ first.
Well, it's funny because the number, the projection that he has is 1 point lower than what he had last year. And if Philippe Deneau is putting up a 53-point season with 20 goals and 33 assists, like this list says, man, I mean, that's – I'd sign up for that 100%. Give me that. If that's your third-line center scoring 20 goals – and putting up 30 assists, give me that all day. But I think this is a little bit more higher than I would expect, just based off where he's going to be in the lineup and probably getting a little bit less power play time as well, because we've seen Deneau on the power play. But who knows, maybe they keep him there and have the nice line on that second power play unit. But I would expect that number to be a little lower, so I'll go under there.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's probably a high 40s. I think you're just going to see probably a tick less of ice time, or the ice time that he does get could be against those tougher centers. And maybe, you know, McClellan's able to play matchups a little bit more. So in theory, his third line role could be a better matchup. They could absolutely dominate a lot of third lines. So maybe there's a case for that, but I'll go a little bit under. I think if he gets 50 points, that'd be great. As you mentioned, as a third line center. So I'll go under the 53.
Now, I think this is interesting why I picked Deneau here is we talked about a little bit in the middle six conversation, and we'll kind of reiterate this here. Are we going to see an evening out of the minutes being played, right? Are they going to constantly roll lines to be similar time until maybe the third period where they need to shorten the bench to where Deneau is still getting similar minutes to who he was last year? As Joe mentioned, they are playing other teams' third lines or having that matchup advantage to where we don't see the production drop off too much.
Well, this is what I think is going to happen, especially in closer games, probably later on in like the third period or so. If you have Quentin Byfield playing on the first line with Kopitar and Kempe, obviously that's where we all expect him to start. I think if you get to a point in a game where it's really close or getting down to the nitty gritty, I think you slide PLD to that side of that position with where Byfield's playing. So you have Dubois, Kopitar, and Kempe on a line. And then all of a sudden you have that really formidable top line. And then you can kind of roll out Deneau right after that. So you have that still 1-2 punch, because you still want to shorten your bench a little bit when you get down to the grittier part of the game. But yeah, I mean, so I don't know. That's kind of where I see it going, where McClellan's eyes are going toward the in important parts of the game.
Joe, what name do you want to go to next? Where do you see an interesting one on this one?
I was just looking at the list too. Sorry, give me 1 second. So
yeah,
I'm gonna say I was surprised to see Anže Kopitar actually projected for 70 points. I thought that number would come in a little bit lower. I'm optimistic at 70. I think I actually don't know if he gets much more than 70. I was a little surprised at that.
I think it's easy to go. I would actually want to kind of shift the focus, though, to the defenseman, because I've talked often about how I just don't like how there's not a lot of offense from the defenseman. And my number was Doughty. I don't think he gets 48 points this year. I'm taking the under on that one. I think that's a lot. And when you look at the rest, like Matt Roy at 20 is the next defenseman, right? I mean, that's
– is it, I know these are projections. Is Gavrikov at 30?
He's at 20. Okay. Anderson's at 19. And again, I think that's all reasonable, right? Right, Gavrikov, Roy, Anderson, around 20 points. Yeah, I wouldn't expect much more than that. I just think maybe the case for Doughty to get that is some of those heavier minutes can be shared with Gavrikov, Roy, and I can buy into that. But I know Doughty's had a bit of resurgence here, and I'm not saying he's going to fall off the map and score 30 points, but I think he's probably closer to 40, 45 than 48, 50.
I kind of would agree with that. I mean, if a lot of this is based off of what the power play is able to do again, though. I mean, the power play was top five last year, and Doughty was playing on the top unit and got a lot of his points there. So, I mean, if the power play is still doing the same thing, then I wouldn't be surprised if Doughty is able to get 50-plus points. So, why not? I'm gonna do the over on Doughty, over 48 points.
I mean, Quentin Byfield at 19 points on this. Now, I don't know how evolving hockey is factoring in his playing time, but we could be wrong. We're assuming he's going to start on that top line. Who knows? We'll see where he starts. But
I would smash that over all day.
I mean, it's got to go. It's just got to go.
If he scores 19 points, then there might be pitchforks and torches outside.
It's just got to go over.
I think the interesting one is Arthur Kaliev at 33, 15 goals, 18 assists, and he was almost a non-factor to end the season there. I think that's another interesting one there.
One of the players that's going to get the most opportunity off of the trades that have happened, right? I mean, I would expect him to get probably not top-line power play, but second power play unit minutes. And then, I mean, a lot of people
won't get top line because Kempe's playing in his Kempe's.
Yeah,
his
I mean, position. And a lot of people have penciled him in at that second line, either with PLD or on the third line with Deneau. So he's definitely going to get the opportunity. It's just with Kaliev, it's just a consistency thing, right? I mean, last year he was on fire at the beginning of the year. He was scoring on the power play. I mean, I was calling for him to get more power play time, and then I think he broke his foot, and then just all of a sudden couldn't be the same player that he was when he came back. So if he can just have a consistent year throughout the year, stay healthy, and just have a little bit of motivation, show a little bit of a determination to his skating style and on the ice in general, in terms of a two-way game too, I think he'll definitely get over the 15 goal total. I would expect Kaliev to get at least 20 goals in the year. Whether he gets the 18 assists would be whatever. But, I mean, I think over 33 points is definitely not out of the realm of possibility for Kaliev.
I think it's not out of the realm, but I'm going under because I don't know that he's somebody that's going to be a lock in for that second line. I mean, he may start there. I don't know if his play is going to warrant him being there consistent enough. I think McClellan has shown that he's not afraid to pull the trigger on Kaliev if the game just at all three zones isn't there. We saw it in playoffs. I mean, we saw the one shift in Edmonton. I said, well, that's his series is done. And we never saw him the rest of the series. I mean, it was so given that, I think the talent's there, the shot's there. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but not sure yet that he's going to be. He's got to earn that. He's got to play well enough to stay in that spot to win that second line spot and then stay in that second line spot.
He and Bjornfoot are the two players that need to have a strong camp. They need to have strong camps. So they want to earn the spots that are right there for the taking. They're there.
So can I ask this question now? Because it's interesting you said that. I wasn't really thinking about this, but we've talked about somewhat of a logjam sometimes. And is there a possibility that Kaliev doesn't make the roster out of camp? Like what if Kaliev doesn't have a great camp and Fagimo comes in and has a great looking camp or something like that? Is that a possibility?
No.
I don't think Kaliev
doesn't have waivers, correct?
I'm not saying
he's played over 100 games.
Kaliev, I think
does it not have to clear
waivers? I think he's exempt. I'm looking it up right now.
Per cap friendly, he's waiver exempt, which is kind of the reason I asked the question. Because it's like, again, I'm not saying I would do this, but is that we saw that hook was, you saw it in the playoffs. And it's like, if McClellan can't trust the kid, and it's been a couple of years now, is it in the cards? Is it possible?
I mean, it's definitely a possibility. I think things would have to go terribly wrong from training camp, or to the point where they're just not seeing anything out of Cal. Because the thing with Arthur is that he's a goal scorer.
Yeah.
And they're trying to teach him that full 200-foot game, and it just really hasn't come to fruition in his early part or his initial career so far. So, yeah, it just – you can't teach the shot that he has. That's the thing. He's got such a good shot, and to have that kind of weapon on the second power play unit is massive. So, I don't know. I think it'd be a loss if they didn't have Kaliev on the roster to start the year.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. One other thing, too, on Byfield, for those that are looking for maybe something that's a little bit more optimistic – is for those that hate the Athletic and Dom Lashisen because of his prior projections, he has Byfield projection for 47 points, which is interesting. Ooh.
Somebody's a little spicy. Let's move it over to the next topic here in the crease. We are going to be talking about the goalie situation, our last position preview. We're going to be rising from the ashes here and talking about Phoenix Copley here first. Guy resurrected our season. There's gonna be more fire puns coming, so be prepared for that. But I think he is the really one that really turned the season around for us. We got actually competent, okay goaltending that was allowing our offense to actually win games for us instead of just keeping us into it. He's presumed to be the starter, I would guess, right now. I know they went out and paid a whopping $1 million for Cam Talbot, so there is money invested there. But ultimately, I think that Copley's going to get the first shot. Russ, you talked about it, you know, copious amounts of times on X that you have placed almost a full mortgage on Copley making the Vezina this right. year.
So we're going to be very rich if he wins the Vezina.
So where do you see his season going? And talk about him a little bit last year and where he needs to maybe improve or not improve. Maybe he just needs to stay stationary in his production.
I mean, for Phoenix Copley, he just needs to do what he did last year. And it's really based off of the team that's in front of him at this point. And that's pretty much what I feel like Rob Blake and co. are kind of banking on, is that now you have a really solid team all throughout the forward lineup, all throughout defense, in front of these goaltenders, to the point where you just need them to make saves. Just make a save. You don't need to be standing on your head doing these Jonathan Quick splits or whatnot. Just make the save that you need to make. And if you can't make those highlight reel saves, that's more or less the defense's fault. But, I mean, we saw it, obviously, we've talked about it on end, that how last year the Kings just couldn't get a save for the first part of the season, and then when Phoenix Copley came in, a player that wasn't really known to be an NHL goaltender at that part of his career, all of a sudden became one and won 26 games or so and was one of the best goaltenders in terms of winning percentage in the NHL. So just come in and make a save. That's all. And I think that's why I'm a little comical in terms of the Vezina prediction, but – yeah, I mean, if he plays the amount of games that he's playing, he's probably going to be winning a lot of games just based off the team being better in front of him. So I don't think it would be a huge surprise if that happened. But, I mean, Copley doesn't need to change anything that he's done before. Just be Phoenix Copley, and I think he'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, he was – you know, you were singing his praises, and rightfully so, ran in at the start. It's like the guy was – he's pretty much a league-average goalie, maybe slightly better in some scenarios. But for the most part, he was just making the saves that you want your goalie to make. He wasn't costing the team games like Quick and Peterson were. And I think that's the theme of the Kings crease this season with Copley and with Talbot. I don't know if Copley has like the leg up on the starter's role, maybe just because he was here. But I think I don't think they're either starters playing like 45 games. Like these guys are going to be splitting it pretty, or 50 games, whatever. I think they're going to see a pretty good split here. Because I don't think either of them can handle the workload of what would be a 1 or even a 1A, which is fine. Like I've been hashtag goalies guy all along. I'm not going to now say and be kind of hypocritical and say, oh, they should have go paid for a goalie. No, let's go. I'm in on it. I think Russ brought up the point of like, which again, as the way my philosophy is and how I want to play is like the total opposite of how the Kings play, because yes, they're banking on a team that is defensively sound, very structured, very, they don't give up high danger chances. They don't give up a lot of shots against. Like this is how the Kings play. They've been one of the better teams in the league in those statistics for the last 2 to 3 seasons. And there's all reason to believe that that should continue. You look at the strength down the middle, obviously the Gavrikov-Roy pairing. So like, that's what they're banking on with Copley. And I'm, you know, we'll touch on it with Talbot too, but I think that's something to be somewhat optimistic about. I think if you're a Kings fan, when you look at the goaltending and maybe scratch your head, is like, this team generally doesn't give up a lot. And that's how bad the goaltending was the first half of last year. The team wasn't giving up that much and they were still letting up goals. So as long as they're not actively hurting the team, they should be fine. They may not steal many games, if any, but the Kings, you know, the goal is for them to not be in a situation where they're going to have to do that.
Kings last year with Copley, 37 games played. He started 35 and was 24-6.
Crazy.
So if and had a .903 save percentage and .264 goals against average. So if Copley starts 35, Talbot starts 35, and maybe Ridge plays a couple games as injury, that's kind of what you're expecting, Joe? Or do you think that Copley can play 45 games?
I mean, yeah, I guess he can. The guy, from all accounts, is like in fantastic shape. It's just, so, you know, physically, I'm sure he could do it. It's just, you know, he hasn't done it at the NHL level before. So, you know, what type of production are you going to expect from him? And is he going to be able to do it and over the course of a season consistency wise? So that's the concern. So I like your kind of rough thought there of like 35, 35, 10 type of thing. Cause I wouldn't be surprised if you see Rittich get a handful of games in this season, just because that's just the way it goes sometimes. How often is it a season you see teams play two goalies and that's it? It's not often these days with injuries, whatever the case may be. So, like those numbers, like if he did that, those are not, nobody's running to, he might win Vezina if he has that winning percentage, Russ. But
what I'm saying,
A 903 save.
Malibu Beach House for Russ Morgan.
Mojo Dojo Casa House.
There we go.
The 903 save percentage is not great, but it's not the 903 save percentage of like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, where that may have been really something that you don't want at all. Like it was bad. Like this, I think the league average save percentage last year was like 907, 908, 909, something like that. So it's not as if it was crazy. So I think he's capable, but who knows? The guy has been kind of a journeyman for his whole career, so there's kind of a reason for that. But maybe this structure in Los Angeles suits him just fine.
Yeah, so I think it's something that's interesting there, and I'm looking at it here, there, Joe, and I'm not counting games in, just total goalies. I mean, he'd be in the top 50 total goalies, but like I said, I'm not counting games, so I'd have to see what starters are there. That's just a quick glance. Carter Scores coming in here saying that Cam Talbot's going to surprise everybody and win the starting job by December. That is our next goalie here on the docket. So Cam Talbot, just for anybody, 6'4", 201, coming out of Ontario there. And he's had an illustrious career, starting out with the Rangers at 26. Then on to Edmund, where he was fourth in the Vezina voting back in 2016. And then has kind of jumped around from Philadelphia to Calgary to Minnesota and then Ottawa last year, where he kind of had a down year, but you're looking at the 2 years in Minnesota, 915, 911 save percentage, 263, 278 goals against average. So had some competent years there in Minnesota. The two previous seasons was down in Ottawa. This seems kind of like, a reproclamation story type thing where, hey, the Kings are more defensively sound. He'll have less high danger chances. He just needs to be a competent veteran. Where do you think that this signing was made? Was it obviously made because of cash being strapped, but why Cam Talbot over the other goalies in this cash area?
I think it's two reasons. It's his playoff experience and his relationship with McClellan, I think, were the main reasons. And only the $1 million cap hit for that type of player. I think Rob Blake did extremely well in that situation. I agree with Carter. I don't actually think it would surprise anyone if he won the starting job by December. But to start the year, I think we can all pretty much figure out that it's going to be Phoenix Copley or Cam Talbot starting opening night and then the other one starting the next game. And mm-hmm. he'll probably end up doing that switch back and forth throughout the entire season. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Just we saw it happen last year, and even with Korpisalo and Copley, and both of them were playing really well, and the teams were winning games, and they just still kept doing it. He didn't stick with one goalie. So if we're kind of going off precedent here and what McClellan's done in the past, then Cam Talbot is pretty much going to be the 1B goaltender for the Kings. And with that pedigree that he's bringing in and that relationship with Todd McClellan, I think the Kings could have done a lot worse. So I'm really excited with Cam Talbot, and we'll see if he ends up being the starting goaltender for the Kings come playoff time, or maybe they bring in outside help.
Excited isn't the word I would use, but I'm not worried either, though, because I think the only thing that gives me some pause with Talbot is his age. He's had some injury issues recently, but this is a guy I think we, like we talked about with Copy. I would say, Brandon, you asked the question about why they decided to go with Talbot over some of the other goalies, and I think as Russ alluded to, is a couple of really good reasons, and his are probably right. I would also say that I think that the Kings, and I don't know if they targeted Cam Talbot because of perhaps that relationship, or they knew, like, listen, we're not prioritizing this position. We're not paying a goalie. We're not paying Korpisalo. We're not paying one of these other free agents. We're going to do what we got to do. We're going to go get our Pierre-Luc Dubois. We're going to sign the players that we want to sign, and we're going to deal with the goaltending later, which they are obviously listeners of the Hockey Royalty podcast, because that's the way we like to operate. And I think they looked at Cam Talbot as a guy that, again, historically, get him in a good system. We talked about his numbers in Minnesota. You get him in a good system. You get him in a structure. You get him in an environment that's not going to allow a lot of high danger chances. And they're going to roll the dice that's going to be a league average goaltender, especially when you kind of pair him with Cam Talbot. So listen, I'm not excited. I'm not worried. I'm just here for the ride to see the Copley Talbot duo, but there's some concerns here with his age and with his health a little bit, I think. And his play hasn't been great recently. Okay, look at the last couple of seasons. His goal saved above expected has been bad. Let's just call it what it is. But, again, new environment, new team, new system, new structure. There could be reason for optimism.
But I think an added motivation, too, because he's – I mean, we heard it at the press conference or his Zoom after the signing, is that he's coming in knowing that this team is looking to win.
Yeah,
and based off the relationship that he had with McClellan, I'm sure he knows, like, okay, McClellan probably put in a good word for me, and he's given me an opportunity to win and compete for a Stanley Cup. Because the last few, you could look at the Ottawa Senators last year; they were projected to be better. They weren't as good as everyone thought they were. Minnesota Wild have always kind of floundered around being a playoff team, but never really done it too much in the postseason. And so he's never really had the opportunity to play for a legit team. And I think that the Kings probably give him the best chance. I know he played on the Oilers teams back in the day, and they were pretty good too. But at this point of his career, for the Kings to give him that opportunity, I think has to get, like, put in the back of his mind saying, like, this could be my last shot to prove that I'm still an NHL goalie and that I can win important games in the league too. So I'm sure that helps.
I think a healthy Cam Talbot – paired with Phoenix Copley can be bang average. And I think that's fine. I think that's what the Kings, I think that's all they're asking for. I don't think either of them are stealing any games, but as long as they're not costing them games, and I don't think either of them should do that, I think they're okay.
And I think that comes in where Carter Scores is saying Joe is cautiously optimistic.
Well, you know what's funny? It's because, like, we've talked about this the last few years. I mean, Joe and I, we've all had this conversation about goaltenders. It's always been Joe saying, like, just don't pay your goaltenders. Don't pay your goaltenders. And it's I could see it in Joe's eyes and the way he's talking. It's like he's like he loves the fact that the Kings are showing this. He just doesn't love the fact that he has to root for the team. It's like, he almost kind of wishes that another team was going this route. But hey, if it works, then hey, we're looking pretty smart. You're looking pretty smart over there.
So there's
doesn't, then we'll see what happens. Right.
So there's a lot of interesting stuff to this contract here, and Urho brought one to my attention. I never knew this. His contract goes up to $2 million if he plays over 10 games. That's in a player bonus, so his cap hit will still be $1 million. It's a player bonus if he plays over 10. I'm sure he'll get that. But I just noticed that there's also a no trade clause to his contract, which doesn't really make sense to me. But as a veteran, maybe you want not to move your family for no reason.
Yeah.
I'm sure if he needed to, I'm sure the Kings are going to be in the playoff hunt. So it's not like they're trading him away for no reason, unless they are getting a huge goalie at the deadline. Just some interesting caveats there. Thank you, Urho, for bringing that to our attention. Appreciate that. In there. So our last goalie is David Rittich. Signed in there for around that very cheap mark, as the whole goalie room is. And, you know, guy with some pro experience coming in here and probably going to have an injury thing. And then last year, you know, went on a 20-minute diatribe on why having a veteran goalie was bad and Copley was blocking this and blocking that. But it ended up working out for the Kings. And I think a lot of Kings fans are like, well, he saved our season and we need to have a third goalie there. And hey, Portillo can't play 82 or 72 or whatever the amount of the AHL season is. He's going to need a person down there. So David Rittich is there. What do you guys think about him? And maybe, you know, can he spell 10 games? Can he spell 15 games if the injury bug hits for the Kings?
I mean, he can.
So Joe is cautiously optimistic. Okay.
I remember him as he Carter Scores Big Save Dave. I love that nickname. I remember that from back in his Calgary days. Like I thought he was capable back then. I don't know how true that actually is or was, but I thought he was like a serviceable backup who played decent in stretches. I'm just not expecting anything here. Like, to be honest, like, I think he's a guy that, as you said, is kind of in a pinch if they need something, that he can come in and spot 10 games or something like that. I don't know. Like, I don't think that this is any – I don't know that he's any better than – I don't think he's better than Copley and Talbot. I'll put it to you that way. Like, I think he's a definitive third. But who knows? Like, maybe something happens in camp, or he plays really well or something like that. We'll see what happens. But Big Save Dave, he's got a great nickname.
I mean, it's funny. Like, I was reminded the other day that he went to the All-Star game in 2020, which caught me by surprise a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely a good insurance policy to have. He's pretty much this year's 2022-2023 Phoenix Copley, right?
Sure.
If things go terribly wrong, or if there's injuries, yeah, you have that insurance policy to call up someone who's played NHL games, who's only signed to 1 year at $875,000. But yeah, I mean, hopefully it doesn't get to that point because I would think it'd be injury or just poor play in front of him. But yeah, I think it's another pretty decent signing by Rob Blake to have that in his back pocket to with the rain. And also probably help out Eric Portillo too.
Portillo, yeah. You're in LA. The double L sounds, you know, you gotta get that down. Well, I think it's just interesting here. It's, you know, maybe just throwing darts at the board. Maybe we're just playing darts here as the Kings, and they're just, hey, we can get competent goaltending for most of the season by one of these guys at any point in time, and that's all we need. Okay. And then I don't know how that works for the playoffs, because playoffs typically you want to ride somebody, but you know, you got to get through the 82 first, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, listen, I mean, I just, if you're going to alternate in the season, I just don't understand not alternating in playoffs. I really, really don't get that at all. I just don't understand it. And listen, this months away at this point is a totally different conversation. But if the Kings are in a situation where they're alternating and then they just flip a coin and decide to pick one, I don't get it. And they're not the only team that does that, by the way. But
yeah, hindsight's 2020, but I would have loved to maybe have seen Copley get a start or two in this series just based off of that was what you were doing the previous 20 games before you got to that series against Edmonton. Is you were alternating, then all of a sudden,
I don't even know if it's hindsight. I don't even know if it's hindsight though. I think you even suggested that Copley may start game one.
Yeah, I think I was pointing to, I wanted Copley to start game one.
Yeah, so
but, I mean, Korpisalo was playing so well those first couple of games, that was a thing.
He was, and again, that's where you run into a little bit of a tough situation. I understand that, but it's like if they weren't willing to go to Copley at all.
Like, I would have liked maybe you lose game two, you come back 1-1, start Copley game three at home. I mean, I don't know. I guess this is an argument for another day, but
yeah, at this point, it
doesn't matter. But yeah, I guess maybe it'll bring up this point is do you guys like the Kings probably eventually go after a goaltender at the trade deadline, right? That's what everyone's kind of thinking. Do you think that happens?
I think that you're the only person I've ever heard bring that up. So,
maybe it's just me.
I don't know. I mean, listen, it wouldn't shock me if they try to acquire a goalie, but I'm not sold on it just because I think it's difficult because you got to find goaltending that's available. You got to find goaltending that is going to be, you're going to be able to get at a decent price. Which I think both of those are going to be difficult. And then you've got to let that goalie time to adapt in the new system. So if you're doing it close to the deadline, we saw it with Korpisalo, that leaves you 20 games. And if you split them like Korpisalo did, so there's that. And then when you get the playoffs, you're going to hand the reins to the guy who played 10 games for you. And I don't know. Like I get the logic. I just think that I don't know. When has a goalie been traded mid-year and it's made an impact? Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's an answer to that and I'm just not thinking of it. But when you look, I think at the Blues, when they acquired Ryan Miller, they thought that was going to work. That flopped. Like, I just think it's so far from a guarantee that I think the goaltender move is an off-season move. Now, maybe there's a goalie with term. You know, who knows what happens if Nashville tanks again. Not tank in the sense that they're doing it on purpose. I mean, just they have a bad season, which I don't know. I think they're going to be competitive enough. I don't know if Saros is going to be on the block. That's going to take a boatload to get him anyways. You know, we're going to have the Thatcher Demko conversations maybe at some point if Vancouver struggles. But I don't know. Like, if you go down the list and try to think of what goalies could even potentially be available that would be, you know, significant upgrades, they did it last year. So obviously it's something that they're not afraid to do, but I'm not sold on the idea. And I'm also not sold on it being something that necessarily works.
Gotcha.
I don't know.
I will agree with a lot of people around not in LA that if the Kings don't make the playoffs, it's probably more than likely because of their goaltending. I don't see any reason why this team misses if their forward core. I mean, just based off the players that they have and at the forward group, at the defensively, I mean, they're stacked up and down the lineup. And it's just goaltending is the number one issue. And I think I would agree with a lot of people's sentiments there.
It is, but I don't know. Like I think this division's good. Like, are the Kings better than Edmonton or Vegas? I don't know. Like, if you're already starting the Kings as potentially in third place in the division, it ain't crazy to think Seattle – and I'm not saying you are, Russ. I'm just saying, like,
yeah. If
thinking about this, like, there's, you know, there's a scenario where it's a battle. They're in a dogfight, you know, and they just, maybe they miss out by a game. Maybe the goaltending is not good. And to, maybe to your point, maybe the goaltending is league average, where if they had above average goaltending, they would have gotten in. So that's fair. But I also want to say, if the goaltending is average, which is probably what they're banking on, that's good enough to make playoffs. And I think it could be. It's just, I also think it's a very, very competitive division.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you got really four of the best teams in the Western Conference in this division. In terms of, I think Kraken are definitely going to
Kraken
be good again. I don't see them dropping off. And then you have the Kings, Golden Knights, and Oilers.
Yep.
Four of the best teams in the West right there.
And it's not as if, I think the only like bottom feeder is San Jose. Like, I think Anaheim's going to be competitive. I think Calgary's going to be competitive.
Oh, come on.
They will be competitive in the sense that like they're not going to be like last year.
They're, okay. I saw odds. I think it was on one of the betting websites that I have to go, the offshore betting websites I have to use because I'm out here in California. But I think they had odds on like which team would finish the worst in the NHL. And it was like the Sharks and like the Ducks were one of the teams too. So
I disagree.
There you go. If you want to take a little shot at Anaheim. But I think for me personally, I think like San Jose, Vancouver, no one knows what Vancouver's doing. I think Anaheim's going to be worse than what you guys do. I don't know.
I think Anaheim could have a 20-point increase in there, which still only gets them to like the 80s, by the way, because they were that bad last year, or maybe even the 80. But like I think the coaching change is going to make such a big difference there. I saw a comment, and I don't know, it was from Tim Stewart, about Marc-Andre Fleury, a midseason trade. I think if he's referring to the one in Minnesota, I don't think he played well. And didn't he not even, I'm trying to think of, they didn't play him in playoffs. I think the season, I forget now who the other goaltender was.
Was it Talbot?
It might have even been Cam Talbot. They ended the series because Fleury didn't play very well. And they went, I think it might even been Talbot that they went to.
That was 2 years ago, right?
I think so. I think it was years ago. So I don't know how much of an impact that was, to be honest with you. I really don't. And which I thought that, again, going, unless I'm, again, maybe I miss, there's a different trade maybe, but I didn't like the trade to Fleury because I didn't think Fleury was that good. And it didn't, I don't think it really helped Minnesota.
Well, we could discuss that back in February, whether we need a goalie or not. Next week, we're going to be talking about camp, and getting everything going for the rookie faceoff, the games in Australia. Appreciate you guys in the chat. You guys are still going strong in the offseason here. You guys can find us at NHL Russell, JW Paterino, Kopitar 4HF, Randall Commando 24, and Hockey Royalty at Hockey_Royalty. Find all the articles coming out at HockeyRoyalty.com. The season is just right around the corner, so keep an eye out for that. Articles are going to be coming fast and furious. We also got the rain starting up, camp starting up. Which prospects will make it? Where were they impressed? And then we get the rookie face-off as well. So thank you guys always for coming in the chat. Get in there, like, and subscribe, and have a good night, guys. Go Kings, go.
Go Kings.